that shit.
That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a quarantine edition of the Corner Store Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Koval. I'm sure everyone wants to be outside. It's starting to get nice in the city of Chicago. Spring has finally graced us with its presence. And in the Corner Store, we have a legend, an OG of the muralist scene, of the street art scene. The studio work is just fucking stunning. A really great guy and a really great Chicagoan. We have my mans, Jeff Zimmerman, in the building. Sir, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for that fine introduction.
No, it's facts, man. I'm excited to talk. Jeff, before we get going, where can people find your work? Because as we talk, I want people to maybe also scroll along. I don't know, IG, I know you have other spaces too. Where's a good place to see your work?
I would say Instagram. After all these years, I'm updating my website, which is jeffzimmerman2ns.com. But it's kind of like all over the place. But Instagram is Instagram's probably the best for the most recent stuff. Plus, it's got the studio work that I've been working on since we've been locked down. So my Instagram is just Jeff Zimmerman.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, man. And you have been... I mean, you stay crushing, like that is just, that's a real thing, but what is this doing to your studio practice?
You know, I was planning on making a mural in my studio. Like I do, like, you know, you do like outdoor work and you got to self edit. I've been trying to put a handgun in a mural, you know, for years, and even on my own place, and you're just the landlord. He just would have freaked out. There's been some shootings around there. So I do the outdoor stuff. You got to self-edit. You got to take... It's in the public. It's citizen mural. So you got to take that into account. So in the studio, I do canvases that are like 12 by 40 feet wide. And I do whatever the F I want. And I've been planning on doing something just to react to what the hell's been going on for about a year. And so then the quarantine happened, and I was like, well, I guess I'll start now. So I've been, since like March, working on this big canvas in my studio that's, you know, not about the coronavirus, sort of about 2020 and 2019 and just the zeitgeist. It's about the zeitgeist, you know. So there's some coronavirus in there, but just what's on my mind. So I've been doing some small commissions, working in the studio, trying to get some projects to come to life now that the summer's here. But, you know, I spend half my time by myself, an arm's length away from my wall, listening to music when there's no quarantine.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So I've been psyched working on a cool piece.
Now, the mural, how do you make a mural inside? Like, how does that, I mean, what does that mean, I guess?
Well, like, you know, like any Jackson Pollock, they call those murals. So just a big canvas is quote unquote a mural, and that's all I'm doing. You know, I got a 12-foot ceiling and I got about a 60-80-foot wall, and I just roll out a giant piece of canvas and prime it and just do it in there. And so that's my personal work. And then I roll it up, and if I have a show, I just unroll it, staple it up like a giant, huge piece of wallpaper. I put like molding around it, you know, like trim from the house to make it look fancy. So that's how you do a mural. I mean, a mural is, you know, it's a plastic term. It can mean a lot of things, but in this case, it just means a giant canvas.
Right, right.
Murals actually, you know, I hate, like, mural. Like, if I say mural to a lot of people, they see multiracial hands in a circle. They see a dove with a rainbow and a piece, you know.
Right.
Mural can be a real pejorative term. So sometimes I try and say, like, oh, I'm a, you know, a street artist or a public art or... I'm working on a big piece of art, you know, no M word before it.
Yeah.
You know.
What do you prefer as a term?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I go back and forth. Mural people get. Depends on who I'm talking to. You know, I want to be a painter. You know what I mean? Just a painter.
Yeah. Well, that's what. You're certainly that, and I want to talk. I want to talk about aesthetics, and I want to talk about influences. You know, maybe just to start, I have some ideas about aesthetics. You know, but I'm curious. First, is like, how did you get involved in wanting to be a painter?
I fell I fell into it ass backwards. I was someone, I spoke Spanish and I knew graphic design, so I was artsy. And a friend of mine, they had a vacancy in Pilsen for, they needed an art teacher. It was through the Art Institute and they couldn't find anybody. So I said, yeah, I can be an art teacher. What, you know, how hard can it be? It was googly eyes, popsicle sticks, stuff like that. I had taken drawing classes in college. And one day this priest who was associated with St. Pius down there stopped me and he said, dude, I can't find, you're the art teacher. And I said, yeah. I said, I can't find anyone to paint. I want to paint a big mural across the street here and no one will do it. So all the Mexican local guys just told him no. And I said, sure, I'll do it. And I took a painting class at Columbia College that winter, painting 101. And I called up the Chicago Public Art Group. Someone said, call these people. There's this guy, John Towns, who was down there. And they were really, really a great big resource. But, you know, he had to tell me primer, you know, oh, primer. Like, I was studying no squat, and I was going to paint this mural. And he told me how to find a scaffolding. And oh, I was really just that green. And I just showed up, and I had taken a painting class, and I stopped some people on the street, and I said, you're going to be the people crossing the river. What? And, you know, we talked about it. They were all local. They knew that what was going on. Took their photos, 35-millimeter film, crossed my fingers that I got the pictures. Week later, saw if I got them or not. But, and then I just figured it out. But it was the best summer I'd had in a long time. And so when that took, you know, one mural took me all summer. It was this, you know, I'm way faster now. But end of the summer, I said, you know what? I was doing graphic design at the University of Illinois Chicago Alumni Association magazine. And I said, I'm out of here.
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
I'm going to become an artist. This is way more fun. I can't be in this air conditioning cubicle anymore. And so that was it. I just
did. Is that mural still up? Is that mural still running?
Yeah, it's a mural on Ashland in 19th. It's kind of Virgin Guadalupe.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
So what's funny, if you go down there, so you'll see I did, it goes backwards in time from left to right. So the first thing I did ever was the Virgin of Guadalupe. And then I think 4 years later, came back and did the other two panels. And I did the other two in half the time it took to do one. And people, when they go down there and they look, they go, oh, that's really great. Hey, who did the one with the Virgin of Guadalupe? Because it kind of sucks. But literally, I taught myself how to paint from the top down.
Right.
So the very final face, there's a woman's face, is like finally like, oh, wait, I learned how to paint on that thing. But literally the first one looks different than the other two, but that's because I had no practice.
I find it hard to believe that you were not a painter prior to that. I mean, if you tell me that, that's the truth. But you were interested in the arts.
Yeah, I could do like a mean caricature of you. I could do, I could draw. Like, I took drawing classes in college, so it was like charcoal drawing, ink drawing. I took like, what, 4 classes in college because I had to.
Yeah.
And I actually enjoyed that. And I actually did very well at the drawing, but painting was like, I thought it was too hard. So I never took a painting class until I just, you know, just like, man, that might be fun to try and paint a giant mural on that building. And I'll take a painting class and I'll give it a whirl. And if, you know what? It wasn't that hard. But it's, you know, it takes practice. I've been painting every single day since then.
Well, so, how many murals you have around the city alone?
I should have thought about that before we started talking. I don't know. One goes away every year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whole building's gone.
Right.
And, 20? 15? I really don't know. I got to track around. I've probably done 20 or so in Chicago, maybe 25.
Well, and some of my favorite, as you said, have disappeared. There was one on North Avenue near the...
Remember that one?
Yeah.
That was the first personal one.
I loved that one. I saw that. And to me, so I don't know if you associate yourself with this, but, you know, there was that moment in the early 90s where, you know, you and Chris Silva and Cody Hudson and a few other folk, Mike Genovese, like, to me, this was like a early OG pioneering period of Chicago street art, in that time frame, you know? Do you think of yourself in that way? Is like, did you know those guys, or?
I knew them. I mean, so I didn't even live here until 96.
Where'd you come from?
I mean, I was in the suburbs, and then I was a volunteer in Peru from 92 to 95.
Oh.
Moved back to the city, and then I worked for a year at the Alumni Association. And so I just started in like 1996. I moved to the city and started painting and stuff. Or I started volunteering and working, and then I started painting that at the end of that summer. But yeah, I met all those guys around 97, 98. And it was a small crew back then. And what I tell people now is, you know, back then it was street art, lowercase s, lowercase a. You couldn't find anywhere to do it. You'd get in trouble if you did it.
Right.
Someone would paint the city, everyone would paint over it. But now it's, you know, developers and they're coming to you.
Yeah.
It was a 180. Back then it was like, can I do street art? Get the fuck out of here. No. Now people are they're seeking it out. So there's a lot more people doing it, and that's great. But yeah, back then there was a handful of us.
Well, you've also had a hand. I mean, it's your work that is, you know, kind of the standard, and it's what has helped to, I think, push a culture in that way. I mean, I think people see your work, they're like, I want that. And even if they don't know it's you per se, they're like, whatever that is, can we have more of that now? I mean, that which is a 180. I mean, it took 30, 40 years for that to change.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, when I first I did that mural in Pilsen, the Virgin of Guadalupe, and I was like, that was awesome. So I was living in just down the street from the North Avenue mural on North and Honoree with my roommate, and I started making paintings. I'm going to be an artist. So I got canvas and didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, the only people who saw my art was my roommate. And so then I'm like, I got to do another mural. Literally, I started walking around the neighborhood, and that building used to be Thomas and Lighting. They were a lighting warehouse for like TV and commercials. And the guy was just in a mood because a bunch of people like design and Chris Silva, he had told them all no. And I knocked on the door one day, and he's like, just do whatever you want. Just don't bother me. Literally. And it was just down the street from me. And so I said, ooh, I got to come up with something. So I came up with that mural, paid programming is what it was called. But I approached it like a graphic designer. I approached it with, I made it like puzzling.
Yeah.
So what I loved and what I learned about before I did the mural in Pilsen was the Mexican, the Tres Gigantes. And I loved all that. And then I learned about, like, William Walker and community-based artwork. But then when it came time for me, I had this big blank wall. You know, I kind of didn't follow those rules. There's no heroes. There's no local activists. The messages are ambiguous. It's, you know, it was about materialism and gentrification, really. And then that building got razed, and there's a condo building there now.
Right.
Perfect. Is that ironic or perfect? I don't know what that is.
It's the horrible metaphor, right?
It's perfect demise.
Yeah.
But so anyhow, and that's what I've always tried to do is, I don't want it to look like a mural like we were talking about. I never put famous people. I put regular people. And it's kind of the opposite, you know, fame and, you know, Paris, remember Paris Hilton? How famous you for what? So it's like anti-fame, but regular people and puzzling. You know, I want people to walk away and go, literally, I don't get it.
Right.
And if you don't get it, next time you're driving by, you might slow down and be like, what the fuck? What is going on here? Because if you get it, it's either a mural, traditional, because it's telling, it's propaganda, basically, or it's a billboard. And those, they're one trick pony. You know, you see it, I got it, and then just next time I don't even see it anymore.
Right.
So people kind of were like, I don't get it, and they kind of didn't like that. But so that's how I tried to push the envelope. I tried to make the technicality of it a little harder. And then the messages of just, you know, what is art anyway? Like a friend of mine who's very successful now, and like I pulled the rookie move, like, well, what is it about? And he gave me this look, and he's like, I don't know. And I was like, I gave him a look, like, how can you say that? And he's like, dude, it's not, I don't need to know. That's for them to know. Hmm. That's for the smart people to know, the gallerists. I'm an artist, and I had to make this. And that was super inspirational.
Wow. Yeah. That must have been liberating. I mean, so when I see your work, two aesthetic choices come to mind. You mentioned the first, which you said it pieced together. I think of collage, right? And right. And that being central in all of the objects you're placing into one space, but in ways that I'm conducting my own narrative then via those objects. But you are also first of all, that feels very hip hop to me, and I wonder if that filters into any or DIY or punk or something like that. But just that aesthetic of collage, pastiche, you said it comes from graphic design.
Yeah, my graphic design experience was like Cranbrook and all that old stuff, or the Face magazine. You remember that? It was like Neville Brody was the graphic designer. So real kind of Swiss and sort of U of I in Champaign had a really good program. So I learned a lot about visual weight and stuff like that, and visual meaning and how heavy a visual meaning can be. So my murals are not random. They're definitely not linearly narrative.
Right.
So hopefully in the end, you look at the whole thing and you back up and there's some kind of gestalt. This is kind of about something and I kind of think I know what it is. And you walk up and you're like, I think it's this. And I go, I want to spark dialogue. I want to be sitting there and I'm like, here's what I'm thinking. And then you go, well, here's what I'm thinking. And then we talk about it.
Yeah.
That is a home run for me. My mural work is a little more collage-y in a sort of obviously professional way, I guess, rather than the wax tracks, paste up, wheat paste.
No, stuff, of course. Yeah. You're balancing color you're doing a lot of work in sometimes small spaces and sometimes giant spaces.
Bigger is better. I wasn't even trying to be funny, but I said, yeah, I got this little mural going in my studio. And I showed this dude, and it's like, dude, that's huge. It's 12 by, 50 feet. For me, I didn't mean to, I just said little. I wasn't trying to be, but, that's not that big for me.
Right. You have buildings downtown that are stories. I mean, the hand, right, that you have downtown is, I don't know, 5-6 story. I don't.
Well, there's that other the hand. I think is you're talking about a building on Balboa, and that's 16 stories.
16 stories, Jesus, yeah.
So there's a knot up there. I've been doing these knots for a long time. So there's a knot floating down on State and Wabash, or State and Balboa. But that's the highest I've ever gone, to 16. Once you get over, it's just more proportionally a lot more work, and it gets slower the higher you get. But as far as like, oh, gee whiz, it's, after like 8 stories, you might as well be 80.
Right.
What's the difference?
Yeah, I couldn't do 3 stories, to be honest. If I couldn't jump down safely, I'd be like, I'm good. I'm gonna stay here.
It's not going so long. In the end, you're just like, I don't even care. If I fall, that's fine. I'm so over this project. Let's just however it ends, I just be done. I hope I fall.
Well, you mentioned the knots, and so the knots are the other aesthetic kind of phrase I have in mind for your work, which I've mentioned a ton on this show, and because I talk about it all the time, because it has a lot for me to do with a Chicago aesthetic that I think of as realist working class portraiture. And in your work, you figure both, as you said, everyday regular ass people, but also the objects in your work have such attention to detail. They're so fine and refined. There's so many layers. Like the knot, to paint a knot it's its own puzzle, I imagine. And yet you render it in such a way where there's on a 2D surface such texture and depth that it's mind blowing.
Well, thank you for saying all that. I try. But, just like what you're saying, the knot was I'm trying to come up with an image that made you feel like you were like sick to your stomach. And the cliche came up, I got knots in my stomach. And my friend Alex can tie knots. And so that knot is called a monkey fist. And that's, you tie two ropes together and then I make that ball and I swing it around and I throw it to shore. It's a way to throw a line from one boat to the shore back and forth. So that's what its function is. But it's in that ball. And I looked at it, and it was all fibrous. And I was like, fuck that. I'm never going to be able to paint that. However, you're not going to grow unless you find a chance. I like to say make it hard. You know, I could have made a plasticky-looking knot. Make it hard. So it was a challenge. So that knot, I literally looked at it and said, oh, that'll never work. And then I went after it and did some studies and got it. And now I paint it all the time, and it does have, so it's like infinity, it kind of swirls into the center, and it's, you know, it's a light-colored rope, it's a white rope and a colored rope, and if you put them together, and you force them together, and there's a lot of tension there and pressure, sometimes it turns out that they can work together as one and be one whole, so it's like
wow.
Thank you.
Wow, look at you. Yeah, man.
Not supposed to be inspirational about unity. And, but whatever, it's kind of cool to look at, but it's a nautical knot. But, so yeah, that's been, I don't know, but I'm trying to do that all over the place. I've got one of those in Argentina, the Zocalo in Mexico and Puerto Rico. The one in Puerto Rico is gone, actually. The building's gone because of the hurricane. Wherever I go, I try and paint a knot. And if I can get out of the country this summer, that's my thing. You know, people show up and they put their bubble letters up. Boom! I leave knots where I go.
Right. That's my. Well, when did you start traveling to paint?
Not even that long ago. Probably only like 2012 only. Actually, you know what I'm talking about? Way back when, before the financial crisis. I was traveling around and making murals, but I was doing portraits of people. And then the financial, and it was good. I mean, I was in, you ever see the book Street World? The thick ass book?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's me and Invader.
Yeah.
And the twins.
Yeah.
And that's it. I'm in good company, you know. But then the financial crisis hit, and I was like, oh, I can't do this. Plus, I had a little boy. I'm like, I can't be gone all the time. And so I stopped, basically quit art, and it took a few years off.
You quit art?
Yeah, I tried to like start doing like businessy things in town, and it didn't work out. It wasn't a smart idea. I should have just kept at it, but it kept calling me, and it turned out that's what I got to do.
Yeah.
But I took a few years off, and that really shot me in the foot, because when I came back and I started to be like, I'm back, let's do some murals, I'm ready. And people were just like, Jeff, who? You know, the world had moved on. So I had to kind of start over a little bit. So I started traveling again, I'd say in like 2013 or 14 or something, not that long ago. So I don't have that much stuff out there anymore. So I'm starting again, I'm back.
Yeah, no, well, you've been here too. I mean, I was riding my bike yesterday up in Rogers Park. I saw a piece on the viaduct that has to be pretty old at this point. Maybe I'm mistaken, but it was
probably 8 years old now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is something you've been at it. Who have you? I mean, you mentioned you mentioned some of the great Mexican muralists. You mentioned William Walker. Who are some of your other influences? Like, who have you, you know, taken notes from and study and.
Wow, that's a good question. And it really, you know, like it's real hard to stay yourself, you know? So it's really, for me, it's murky waters. Like, you know, you'll see an art, back in the old days, you see an artist like sitting in the magazine aisle just looking for images and looking for inspiration. And then you end up seeing like, ooh, look what Kevin did. And it sinks in there. Dangerous. So I try and keep it old worldy. I mean, William Walker in the Mexican, you know, Siqueiros,
yeah,
and Vera and those, Clemente.
Yeah.
I learned about all them from the Chicago Public Art Group.
Right.
And I went down to Mexico to like see their work and travel and sought it out. And, you know, the awesome William Walker was doing, he's really the influence, because he managed to always keep politics and meaning in his murals. You know, I see a lot of times nowadays what drives me crazy is like, oh, wait, here comes big piece going to be in this neighborhood on this wall. And I come back and it's like silly or fluffy or just decorative. And it's like, this was an opportunity here to say something. So I just try and keep that. I try and keep that in mind, but I like the Jomelos, you know, I like Shepherd Fairey, you know, I wish I could be a giant, you know, stencil guy.
Really?
You know? Well, sometimes it's just like, I want to get in. It takes me forever to do these giant projects, you know, and to have a system down where you can do something really cool, visually striking, and be about something, but get in and out. Oh my God. I'm like jealous.
Yeah. So, right.
What I'm like, I thought it's like hard now. There's a lot of like, who's that? Okuda is doing some cool stuff. Don't even get me started. We'll talk about that. There's I'll name like 25 people. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah. So in terms of your practice, then, I mean, how often you live in your above your studio, right? How often are you, what is your practice like? What's that discipline? I feel like you're always making work.
Yeah. I mean, like if I'm working on a project, it's an exterior project. If it rains, I'm in my studio working on Jeff's work. So if I'm working for you, when I have time myself, I'm working for me. So it's literally like all the time. You know, I'm a night person kind of. It depends. If I get up early, I'm an early person, but I hate getting up early. But when I do, I'm real productive. And then I'm productive all the way through the night, you know. On an exterior project, you know, we worked 12. When we did that Kerry James Marshall piece in the Cultural Center, we were working 16, 17-hour days all the time, like 5 days in a row, because we had to get it done. And, you know, once you get out there and you get everything set up, you know, just to break down and go, it's just, let's a few more hours, just make it that much more efficient.
Yeah. Now that's a spectacular project, and maybe not everyone knows, but if you can explain your role, this is to the west side of the Cultural Center, right behind the building. There is it covers the height of the building. There's a Kerry James Marshall mural. You had a pretty big role in it.
Yeah, they wanted to, So you can't paint on the Cultural Center, but then like Nathan Mason or someone realized that back wall there had been reproduced. They've done work on it and reproduced it in like 1970. So it wasn't original. It looks original. But so it got out of the like saved spaces or whatever the law is for protected spaces and stuff, so they can get around it. And they wanted to, they just, you know, street art's cool. Like we just said, it's a 180. Can we paint it in the Cultural Center? Let's get the biggest guy in town, the biggest big shot. They approach Kerry. Kerry James Marshall, he doesn't know about painting something, 100 feet tall. So they looked around, and I talked to him, and there was a lot of, like, moving parts on how to work around that. It's a very unusual, very strange space. There's a giant hole in the middle where you got a free fall. And so I was able to figure it out for him, and, you know, they were all nervous because it was Kerry. They wanted it to be perfect. And I was happy to do it. I've been a hired gun for, you know, not just him, but a few other very established, you know, artists. And then my role there really is just to execute their vision. And Kerry would show up and I'd look down, or he'd call me on his cell phone up there and I'd give me a thumbs up. Really, we do a great job. I don't ever leave it. I'm like, I know he's coming. Don't mess it up. It's got to be perfect. So we were always perfect. But at the same time, you know, he wasn't like, can we move that over an inch, or, you know, nothing right. Like that. That's it was real easy to work with, and he appreciated the friggin' effort. You know, we were up there for almost 2 months doing that.
Yeah.
The gajillion leaves. So if people don't know, yeah, go to the Cultural Center, but go around the back. It's actually a street. It's a court. It looks like an alley. That's where the dock is of the Cultural Center.
Yeah.
But tons of people use that street, but it's not Michigan Avenue where everyone is. But if you go back there, look up. It's a really cool piece. He had a great design. His original painting was really cool. I got to know him. He's super duper busy, that guy. So he didn't have 2 months to do it. But again, I don't think he would have wanted to go up higher than 15 feet or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm the hired. I don't mind being the hired gun. You better call me if you want it to be done right.
That's right. That's right. Well, and you mentioned, so there's obviously there's the commission work, and then there's your work, and what's the difference for you?
That's the thing. So any kind of commission that comes, there's a straight up commission, which I try and say no to. I try and fill my schedule with good commissions. So a not good commission would be, hey, Palm Tree, couple in tuxedo, he's got a martini, there's a crescent moon, okay, that's a commission. Lame. A good commission is, well, we kind of are thinking this, what does it look like? That's my artist. I'm going to regurgitate what you told me visually, and you're going to say, well, I kind of don't get it, that's too challenging, and then say, you know what, you're the artist, let's be a little bit challenging. So it's their idea, their theme, maybe, but I'm going to tell you how to approach it, what it's going to be about and look like. But you'll, in the end, you'll say, oh my God, that is kind of what we were hoping for. And then there's my work, which is, stay out of my way. I'm going to do this. You're not going to get it. But it's not going to be sexual, or it's not going to be insulting in any way. It's going to edify people, but it's also going to be a giant question mark. People aren't going to get it. It's going to be puzzling, and hopefully there's going to be some imagery that's right there, challenging, that some people aren't going to like, but it's not going to be offensive. And I always run I've got a secret group of people, like two people actually, but I pass it around. I'm like, just in case someone's like, I can't even remember the example, but one time my friend was like, dude, look again. And I said, holy cow, that imagery is not even, that's got to go. It's not even about that, but it could easily have been misinterpreted. Mm. And that's the ideal, but that's my work in the public, because there's that self-editing. In this town, there should be a giant handgun. It's not going off. No one's getting blown away. Let's talk about guns. It's a gun. TV, fine, all over the place. But in the street, I know this because I tried to do it before and people were so nervous about it. I haven't done it, but so you self-edit. So it's everything that I want to do. Stay out of my way. It's going to be great, but self-edit it. And then there's in my studio where I can do whatever I want. It's not in the public. If that's too racy for you, sorry. This is my space, my work. It's for the gallery, and that's what I'm doing right now. So... And I'm doing the Zeitgeist thing right now, and it's not let's overcome and have a big kumbaya hug. I'm doing sort of a negative piece. I'm just doing a negative piece just because, but it's not on the side of my building where it's going to bum Kevin out every day when he walks by. I get to really express myself in there.
The gallery world, because this is, I saw that show with Zuby, which is big and beautiful. How long have you been playing in that world? And what has been, obviously you're, now collected and people are buying your work at a, great tick. but what has that experience been with you in that transition? You started in the street and then the studio and then... The gallery is a way to also obviously like earn a living and to be collected.
Well, it is, but I'm not good at that. And frankly, Chicago's not really the place for that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I've been with a couple of really good galleries, and I did that show at the Joe B, and they were all fun, but are they lucrative in the end? And it's like a lot of, I see some artists, like a decent gallery will approach them and they'll go, this is it. Spend a year working on all their work. You just invested a year of your time. What is that worth you in straight up in money? You just spent all, what are you doing with your life? I have to make a living. But then the big show comes, you got to sell all that to put that back in time to pay for all your time. It's a big risk. So if it can ruin some people. So it's a tricky thing. You need to have a gallery that's a good salesperson. You need to have a gallery that's going to really push you, that's aggressive out there and has some curb appeal. You know, everyone wants to do, ooh, if it's popular, everyone's going to flock to them. So they got to have curb appeal. And I've tried it, and I think a lot of my personal work is just, you know, the knots. I paint these ring pops, which have meaning for me, and I do them. And those are accessible. But a lot of my work is just, and I don't, you know, it's not accessible. You know, who's going to put that in their house? Nobody. You know, and that's so big and easy to go in a hotel. Well, no one's renting rooms there once they walk in the lobby and see that. But I do it anyway, right? I don't know. I mean, if there's a gallery that wants to approach me and say, let's do this, that's great. But I can do it by myself with my people that know me. I'm able to sell some work on Facebook or Instagram just from people that I've never even met. It's like a good,
right,
soft way to market yourself and to, you know, no knock against the guy. I love going to a gallery and seeing a show, but for me, it's just not going to work out, or it hasn't worked out. So I should just talk about myself. It hasn't worked out for me as a business enterprise, you know?
Right.
So I do it by myself. I sell to the people that know me, word of mouth. I get some good press every once in a while, which brings in new people. And, you know, I represent me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my gallery is my studio. Come on over, you know.
Nice. No, that's great, man. I saw the ring pop painting and was really struck by it. And I used that was my first hustle. Was selling ring pops out the locker in fifth grade, you know, and so it really resonated. But I wonder for you why that subject matter.
It's kind of a funny anecdote. I was doing an installation at the, you know what? I was doing an installation in the MCA, in the ground floor there. Just a big mural, did it on site. I was in there working all day for like a month, just creating, you know, pretty much whatever I wanted. And then I started to put my handgun in there. And a person at the MCA who had authority kind of said, we don't want that here. And I said, why? Like, isn't this the best place? No, no one's getting shot. It's not even going off. It's just, what is that? It's on TV, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's children here that have a youth camp, and they walk by this all the time. And then I acquiesced. I should have fought, but I did not. I'm just like, whatever, I'll put something else there. But that's one of the examples that I talk about with this handgun idea. So I had to, it was like censorship, kind of. But anyhow, so I started turning around, like, all right, where are these little squirts? And sure enough, they were passing behind me once in a while, like, you know, like 8-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 5-year-olds, like in a little line going from one room to the other, and they would pass by. So I started, like, being friendly with them, talking to them, real cute. But they went to on a trip to the water tower place, and a whole bunch of them got ring pops there. I had forgotten about ring pops. And they all came walking like, yo, 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 check out my bling. And they're all doing it, boys, girls, my bling, my bling. And I was like, you guys are too young to be worried about your bling. And it was like, wow, materialism. So the ring pop became, for me, sort of a symbol of an entry level, you know, gateway drug to materialism. You know, it was like, what are we teaching these kids of these giant, why are they all trying to outdo each other? This one kid had 4 rings and I got more rings. And so for me, and plus then I looked at it, I'm like a crow, and I was like, look at how shiny. Ooh, it's translucent. And then and again it was like the knot. I'm like, I could never paint something like that. I can see through it. I can see all the angles. It's not soft. It's sure shiny plastic, but it's kind of wet. So to paint it was a challenge. It had meaning for me. And so I ended up throwing a bunch of ring pops up in my installation at the MCA.
Nice.
And then I had a gallery show back when I was at the gallery, and I had a bunch of ring pops way back when. And then I friggin' just forgot about them until recently. Someone saw them on my website and said, do you have any of those? And the answer is always yes, Kevin. Yes, I do. And then they said, oh, God, can you show me some? I said, oh, hold on, I'm a little busy. Then you go make them. reach out and go, here they are. So you got to be quick. That's so nice. Because of the commission, I got back into it and I started playing with them again. And I'm going to do more. The one that you're talking about that's up on my...
yeah, on the gram.
That I just finished. It's there's something different about the old ones, these new ones. They're the same, but yet new. So I'll probably work on those all summer. I'll be doing different ring pops.
That's great. Well, man, I appreciate you. I'm such a fan, and I'm such a fan of the work.
I'm a fan too, Jimmy. Who are you on now? Who is it? Jimmy Fallon hanging out?
Oh, Trevor Noah. Yeah.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. The comedy, with Daily Show. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to come. I was telling my boy about coming to see you guys. Come to see. Are you guys? When is the next event?
Well, you know, man, we're doing everything virtually now. So, you know, we will be live when we can be. So, yeah, bring. How old is your boy now?
He's 12 now. Yeah. I think he can handle it. He can handle the excitement.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You guys look a lot alike, by the way, man. Yo, how many times in a month do you get a Kevin Bacon comment, by the way? Do you ever
people I've gotten that since 1984.
Right. When Footloose came out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure.
People tell Kevin, like, oh, you look like that guy Jeff. No, I've been getting that since I was in grade school, and I see it.
Yeah, well, next time he's a fan of the work of Young Chicago Authors, so next time he's in town, we got to get a picture of you guys together. So,
my mom would be thrilled.
Yeah, we got to do that. Jeff, man, thank you. Where again, if you can give what's the gram so people can have hang on to that?
It's Jeff Zimmerman with two N's at the end. So look me up. And dude, I really enjoy listening to the Corner Store.
No, I appreciate that, man.
I can't believe you're able to just keep going. I mean, you've been at it for a long time. We're guests. You keep doing it.
Yeah. No, it's fun, man. I love it. I love stories and I love talking to people. And, you know, it's honestly, man, it's like it's a long time coming to chat with you. So thanks for taking the time.
Oh, my God. It's a thrill. I can't. It's been great. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you, man. Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official Corner Store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the Snack Door, Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the Corner Store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.